New data from the Utah Department of Health shows the number of uninsured people is on the rise. The Jordan School District implements a new policy for selecting school plays. And Dan Bomas speaks to biologist Allison Jones about Utah's plan to protect the state's sagegrass population. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Thursday, August 30th. I'm Brian Grimmett. The Utah Department of Health released new data yesterday estimating that more than 13% of the population went without health insurance last year. That's about 3 percentage points higher than the previous year, but health officials say the increase is at least partly due to improved survey methods. KUER's Andrea Smartin reports.
Utah Department of Health spokesperson Tom Hudako says you can't make a fair comparison between numbers in 2010 and 2011 because state survey methods were changed significantly. For example, pollsters are now calling cell phones instead of just landlines.
It's hard to determine whether we've actually seen as dramatic an increase as the numbers represent, or if we're now just doing a better job in identifying and seeking out and talking to people who actually are uninsured.
The data shows that more than 29% of self-employed Utahns were uninsured. More than 56,000 children were uninsured and living below 200% of the federal poverty level, making them eligible for Utah's Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP.
The fact that we've got that many children sitting out there in the state who are currently uninsured but who are eligible for a program that could get them some help that they need is really going to be a point of focus for us.
Hudako could not point to any concrete actions the state would make to reduce the number of uninsured children, but he says these findings should drive policy discussions about what can be done to help Utahns get access to insurance. Andrea Smartin, KUER News.
A new policy in the Jordan School District calls for parents to play a larger role in choosing the plays students can perform. The Jordan School Board voted Tuesday evening to make the change, despite concerns from educators. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
Maybe Buckingham. I can see Buckingham. Coriolanus is tough.
I've heard the whole world's doing Buckingham.
Joshua Long is helping one of his students rehearse a monologue the student will perform at his audition Thursday for the Hillcrest High School Shakespeare competition team. Long is a theater arts instructor at Hillcrest. He's not an employee of the Jordan School District, but he is the president-elect of the Utah Advisory Council of Theater Teachers. Long says theater educators should be trusted to pick plays appropriate for students to perform.
I'm worried now for the teachers in the Jordan School District that these committees where the teacher and the principal have all these voices of parents telling them what their curriculum is going to be. And I don't know of any other precedent, any other area in the public school system in which parents have a larger say than the teacher in their curriculum and what is taught.
The new policy in the Jordan School District mandates that more parents be involved in the district's drama production selection committee than was originally required. Plays must be approved at least 2 months prior to the production. Students will now need parental consent before participating in any play. The changes are motivated by a campaign from the Utah Eagle Forum last spring when Bingham High performed Dead Man Walking. The conservative group took issue with the play's portrayal of rape and capital punishment. Long says appropriate standards vary from person to person, and adding more parents to the decision-making process could invoke negative feelings about all kinds of plays.
Anything between Once Upon a Mattress and The Laramie Project, depending on who you're talking to, could fall in that. And the policy doesn't define what that means.
Anthony Godfrey is administrator of schools at Jordan School District. He says there are good safeguards in place with this new policy.
So you have general input from parents in the community on that committee as the production is selected. Once a production is chosen, that doesn't mean that that eliminates all possibility for controversy. That disclosure statement allows for individual families to also make a decision about whether their student participates in a production or not.
Godfrey says administrators will meet with teachers periodically to find out if any changes need to be made in the future to the play selection policy. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
J. Sieg Miller, Utah's Democratic candidate for the 2nd Congressional District, outlined his plan for job creation and economic growth. KUER's Todd Patton reports.
High above Salt Lake City at Ensign Peak, Sieg Miller held a press conference where he broke down what he believes would be a solution for the nation's economy. He says his 3-2-1 could create up to 3 million new jobs, add $2 trillion in private investment capital, and give tax incentives for companies that set up domestically. Sieg Miller says his Republican opponent, Chris Stewart, has a plan that could further damage the economy.
He has proposed a radical plan that eliminates a laundry list of agencies and programs, and most importantly, eliminates jobs in the face of our recovery. His plan would unnecessarily eliminate 300,000 jobs on day one.
Chris Stewart says Sieg Miller's claims are false.
I have a degree in economics. I understand the implications of the various plans, and we feel very confident that just the opposite would happen. In fact, our whole point is for job creation, and that we'd be very successful in that.
Stewart says that both he and Sieg Miller do favor lowering the corporate tax rate. Todd Patton, KUER News.
The state's higher education system has begun an initiative to get more women in the state to graduate from college. Its goal is to implement 10 key recommendations from a task force convened by Governor Gary Herbert last year. They include promoting the benefits of a college education, creating women-focused mentoring programs, and flexible attendance and credit options for students who want to balance education, family, and work. Utah restaurant and bar owners are toasting the settlement of their lawsuit against the state's ban on drink specials. The Utah Hospitality Association sued in federal court claiming Utah's law prohibiting establishments from offering discounted drinks or happy hour violates the Sherman Act, which protects against anti-competitive conduct. Bars and restaurants will be allowed to change their drink prices daily, but they won't be allowed to advertise them as specials. Salt Lake City police say a body found in a vacant field is that of a 16-year-old boy who was shot. Police Detective Josh Ashdown says a trucking crew working nearby found Kenyatta Winston about 7:30 a.m. Wednesday on Crandall Avenue. The boy was last seen Sunday evening. Ashdown says family members and friends indicated Winston did not know anybody in that southeast section of the city. An advisory panel appointed by Governor Gary Herbert is getting ready to recommend a plan for protecting the sage grouse in Utah. Utah and several other states are hoping to avoid having the grouse listed as an endangered species. Biologist Allison Jones with the Wild Utah Project has attended all the group's meetings, and she told KUER's Dan Bomas the plan won't protect every place in the state where the birds are found.
Well, I'm most familiar, of course, with the Utah plan and the Wyoming plan, and to a lesser degree, what's happening in Idaho and Nevada. But many of the plans are looking to Wyoming because that plan has been completed and has been signed off on by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So that plan puts about 86% of the current population centers of sage grouse into what they call core areas and puts some stipulations on surface development, for example, within those core areas.
And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service itself has issued a document in the past several days giving the states guidance essentially on what it would accept.
I haven't read through the whole thing yet since it's just out, but I've seen some excerpts, and they are really going by the science and the published literature. So I can report back once I've read it from cover to cover, but my other colleagues in the science and conservation world seem to think it's pretty solid upon first read and will be a good guidance document for the states to follow.
One thing it does apparently permit, and nobody wants to use the word sacrifice, but allowing the degradation, destruction, whatever word you want to use, of a population in an area where development is occurring, such as the Uinta Basin in Utah, with an increased emphasis on protection for the birds in another area that's not under so much pressure.
So Wyoming put 86% of their population centers into core areas. Part of their reasoning was some of those places that were left out of core areas were already very degraded and fragmented. They saw the writing on the wall that those populations were very much struggling and maybe wouldn't make it at all. And so Wyoming chose to focus on the 86% within core areas and tried to make sure that management within those core areas was strong enough and conservative enough that obviously it would pass muster with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but the ultimate goal being viability of the species in Wyoming.
But now the U.S. Fish and Wildlife is seeing that approach is going to be acceptable.
That approach apparently was acceptable to the service in Wyoming. One thing to keep in mind is that Wyoming has over tenfold more individual birds than Utah. They have 200,000 or 300,000 birds in their state. We have less than a fraction of that. We have 20,000, maybe, if we're right on the estimate. And so the Fish and Wildlife Service has made it pretty clear, based on their decision 2 years ago, that this species is warranted for listing. It is in jeopardy. They've made it clear that states with smaller populations have less to gamble with here, and we need to be careful about sacrificing too many of those individuals outside of the core management areas.
In your view, is this the right approach?
The last plan, if you will, that I saw on the table with Utah's working group had about 90% of our LECs, basically, in the management areas, as they're called. They're not calling them cores. I, for one, might be okay with that 90% in the management zones, provided there are very strong protections in place within those management zones that can, you know, guarantee not only the viability of our existing populations in those management zones, but hopefully their growth. There's room to grow these populations.
And Allison Jones is a biologist with the Wild Utah Project.
And finally, three of Governor Herbert's top aides paid a visit to the headquarters of the outdoor retailers in Boulder, Colorado last week. They were hoping to improve the conversation between the trade group and the state over the status of public lands in Utah. Its members object to the legislature's demand that the state take control of federal land, a bill the governor has signed. The outdoor retailers had threatened to pull their twice-a-year trade show out of Utah unless the governor met their deadline to share his vision for public land. And that is your KUER News Pod for Thursday, August 30th. For the latest news and updates from around the state, be sure to check us out online at KUER.org. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.